Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
To the Enlightened Radio
Storytelling
Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Stosh, are you paying attention?
Yes, but I had to wish my wife good will.
You had to attend to your beloved. Okay.
Of course.
Today is Monday, April 1st, and we're starting out right on the theme of April Fool's Day. Today, our theme is Blarney and Malarkey on April 1st.
Yes. And since it's, I don't know what time, 10:19, I think we'll start it off as a bit of April Fool's.
We did. And we also want to thank Andy Offit Irwin, one of our favorite Blarney and Malarkey raconteurs. For singing Tarry Here to open our show, as he does every single Monday.
Right.
What a dedicated man.
Absolutely.
So, Stosh.
Yes.
Tell us about your April Fool's Day so far.
Well, so far.
You did have some technical difficulties that were not your fault.
Yeah. Couldn't get in the meeting.
You were kicked out twice.
First got in the meeting, and then I got kicked out.
Twice.
And every time I try to get back in, it said, sorry, but the host has kicked you out.
Did it actually say kicked you out? Did it say ejected? Terminated?
No, it said kicked you out.
Wow.
I think that's what it said.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad you're back. I missed you.
I am, too. I was beginning to take it personally. Like, God, you know. I know. Okay. I've said stuff that you and John both disagree with, but my goodness. Anyway.
Speak.
Okay. Oh. Usually you say, how are you doing? But that's okay. I'll just go on about speak. Since you
already told us how you were doing. You've been ejected.
Okay. You are on a different track today, believe me. Okay. Well, on April 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Center in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, Speak Story Series in our ongoing service to the storytelling loving community will present Antonio Roja. And in spite of failing for the first two sessions at Speak Story Series this year, I'm hoping to be there in person.
I'm hoping you will be too.
Yeah, depends on how everything's going. Right now, today, I do not feel like doing anything. I'm tired.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's all right.
I'm
legitimately tired from working this weekend. On Saturday, we moved stuff into my brother's new facility. He's not there yet. He'll be there next Saturday. But we had a bed delivered, and there were some other things delivered to his place, and we had to go and put them together. The new place he's going to does not have it's a beautiful place, but the rooms are not furnished. So when you move somebody in there, you have to bring in their furniture and stuff. So we had organized stuff. And we took over, we got a wheelchair for him and all kind of stuff. And we got a new bed frame. And so Terry and I had to go over there Saturday and put that stuff all together. It was kind of fun, but you know, I was going to use his wheelchair and ride it up and down the halls just to see what it was like, you know, but I didn't because we were busy working.
I have some fun furniture you could put together if you're really into that.
Well, I'm only into it if it's necessary.
Okay.
I'm amazed that the of course it's the everything is made in China these days. And you know, that's what I would say, who knows where it's made, but it's made in some foreign land. But I'm amazed at how people can design something like a bed frame, and they send you all the nuts and bolts and stuff, or just bolts in this case, and the design is so well thought out that all they do is they send you a packet with all the nuts and bolts and stuff and all the pieces and one small Allen wrench, and the Allen wrench is just big enough to use to put the bolts in. Everything is designed so that the bolts fit perfectly, and they're all labeled. They got a booklet that tells you, and the spacing between the parts are such that the Allen wrench will just fit in that space and be able to turn around without bumping into things. If it was even 1 millimeter longer, it wouldn't work. And which I thought, you know, somebody sat down and designed, oh, this has got to be exactly this length, because if it was any longer, it wouldn't work. And anyway, it was neat. So, you know.
This sounds like some blarney and malarkey, I have to say.
Well, but it's not.
We have just your word for it.
Okay. Well, you can take my word for some things. You know.
Oh, so when does Tony move?
Tony moves on Saturday.
Wow.
On the 6th. And we've already got the keys to his room and everything, because we started, I don't know, because of the contract we signed before April. We signed it actually on Saturday, so it was still in March, so that we didn't get the new rate.
Wow.
This is going to be an expensive adventure. However, it's going to save wear and tear on our driving to Baltimore, a 200-mile round trip, four times a month. It's been lately four times a month, and sometimes twice a week. And the drive is a killer for me.
Yeah,
just sitting in the car for 2 hours is hard on my legs. And that, I enjoyed having Tony's. We got a wheelchair for Tony, and we made it all spiffy and made sure it was all put together properly and all the stuff. And I tried it out in my garage, and I'm looking forward to when I use a wheelchair. And that's a terrible thing to say, probably, and I'm not saying it lightly, but I cannot walk hardly any distance at all. And I thought, this is not bad. My arms are still working pretty good. So.
Right now?
All right.
Outside?
Well, that's an interesting story.
Yeah. So, and Tony's going to be in a new place, and he's excited about it, you know. And Terry's been on the phone to 85,000 people this week because moving from the Baltimore VA to the Martinsburg VA mainly for us, because of the trip down to Baltimore and everything. But Tony will now be 2.8 miles from our house and about 3.8 miles from, not even three, less than that, about a little over a mile from his place to the VA hospital. And it's a beautiful place, and I'm all excited for my brother to be there because it's much nicer than the place he is now. And I'll be able to see him every day if I want. And
yeah,
I'll be able to go there, and instead of taking him out for lunch, I'll be able to go there and have dinner with him, or lunch or breakfast. And you know, instead of going to a restaurant, all I have to do is pay a small amount, and I can have the same meal he's having.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And the place is very nice. Yeah.
You're both vets.
Yeah. And his son and daughter-in-law and two grandsons are coming up Saturday to pick him up and his TV and his recliner and some other furniture items that he has in his place that we bought for him before. We bought some stuff and his son bought some stuff for his place. And they're going to be bringing him up because they have a nice truck. And then on Saturday evening, we're all going to have dinner at Tony's new place Harmony place. They have a nice arrangement there that, you know, family can come in and have meals with the person who lives there. And it's not pricey. So we'll save a fortune by having the seven of us there for dinner instead of going out to a local restaurant.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a very nice place. I'm really happy for my brother, and I'm glad that we're able to do this.
Okay.
So,
how about if we talk foolishness?
All right.
Do you want to start out?
Well, normally I don't. I always say ladies first, but since it's April Fool's Day, I'll go first, okay?
Okay.
Because I had been a fool on April Fool's Day at times. I never did a lot of April Fool's jokes when I was young. But I found out, boy, as a teacher, there are so many wonderful things about having a teaching career, besides the fact that you get to be with young people. And I've taught, I estimated in my 40-year teaching career that I probably have had 6,000 different individual students in front of me.
Wow.
And I think that is... You know, I hope that number is reasonable. I'm not sure. But I did a count one time, a couple years ago. I went through all my memories and stuff. But the great thing about being a teacher is it's a wonderful job. I loved it all the time. But it also affords you the opportunities to have fun, meet young people, and to learn from them, and also to... have great
don't forget to send me that link where you're the thing you want me
and
to download
to play jokes
when
on
you get a chance.
You know, when I first started, especially with high school, in high school I taught 31 years high school, 9 years of elementary school, so and all together in 8 different schools. But the great thing about high school is that I learned because of how I went to high school that every Friday is a test day. Test. Sometimes it would be every other Friday because of the schedule. They would be missed classes or days off or something like that. Like last week, there was a couple of days off in some schools because of the Easter holiday and all. But I learned that if I taught Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, gave homework during the week, reminders, practice things, never give homework on a weekend, but give a test on Friday, then the kids only have 4 days worth of work to review for that test. And that's the way I went to high school. And we had a report card every Monday for 4 years in high school, which was incredible. Talk about keeping you on your toes. anyway, and it worked. At first, when I announced that to each of my classes, until I was around for a while and the kids got to know stuff about Mr. Z, the kids would think, oh, this is a joke, right? Test on Friday? No, it's not a joke. However, there was a time when I was at Franklin High School in the 70s when it dawned on me that I was having such a good time with the kids, and they were really fun to, you know, not only to teach, but to learn from and listen to and hear their stories. And I decided to play an April Fool's joke on them. And I scheduled a test, and it just happened to be, I forget the year, but it was happened to be that April 1st came on a Friday. And I said, kids, don't forget, test on Friday. And they said, oh, yeah, April Fool's. And I said, don't forget, Friday, test day, remember? And I reminded him a couple of days ahead of time. And so on Friday, especially first period came in, they sat down and I had the test paper printed out already. You know, I spent a long time constructing this test because it was, you know, chemistry and it was 3 pages long. And a lot of multiple choice, but also some calculations. And it was hard. It was hard enough that if I had given it to a bunch of teachers, they would have been yelling at me. Because it asked questions in detailed ways and stuff. And some of the questions were really unfair in a sense. You know, it was like, of all the green elements, which is the most radioactive? Which is a bizarre question because there really is no way of knowing that. You know? What do you mean by the green elements? Is that green in the bottle or green when you react and what's up, you know? And as the kids were getting started, and at first they thought I was kidding. But I was very serious about it, you know, and I just was doing my work up there, and I could hear grumbling, stuff like, what the heck is wrong with him? I don't remember this stuff. And, you know, you know, and it went on and on and on, and classes were 50 minutes, so... When the bell rang, some of the kids were finished. I just said, okay, pass up your papers. And they were stapled, 3 pages stapled. I went to a lot of trouble with this test, you know. There were diagrams that they had to check out, stuff on and everything. And I got them all filed up, and there was always a warning bell in that school before the end of class to remind teachers to, you know, that the kids were going to be leaving soon and stuff like that. And I collected all the papers and had them, and the second bell rang and they were leaving, and there was a lot of grumbling and stuff, and all of a sudden, and I waited till about a third of them got out of the class, and I had taken a bunch of the papers and I lifted them up and I ripped them in half. and then I said to them, don't tell the other kids. Don't tell the other classes. And to their credit, none of my classes told.
Wow.
I got 4 classes that day. Oh, and it was so much fun. And on Monday, when they came in, we had, I think that was one of the best Mondays ever, because the kids were laughing and saying, I can't believe you asked those questions and everything.
were they questions that actually had answers? Could they have?
There were questions that if you had time, you know, like if you had 2 days and couldn't check back in your textbook and stuff like that, you might be able to discover most of them, you know. But there were I did it purposely because, you know, I even took some questions out of a graduate course. You know, that I had, you know, that were legitimate chemistry questions, but way beyond high school stuff. And but for most of the kids, and I knew this would happen, I would say that for 80% of the kids, they were fine with it. They thought it was funny. They didn't mind a teacher pulling a joke on them, especially since it didn't hurt them. And it didn't affect their grade negatively. And I told all of them, for being such good sports, I was going to add 10% on the next test to everybody's grade. And, you know, and they said, wow, can you do that? I said, sure, I can do anything I want. You know? And I said, because it was an exercise in your wonderful behavior and how you are able to accommodate yourself to strange things. And then, you know, I said, because I thought some of you did a really good job at trying, and, you know, And of course, some of them were still griping. And I said, and you guys who can't take a joke, you know, remember that when you pull a joke on somebody else. Okay? It was just for fun. And if it really bothers you, I promise I'll never do that again. Aha.
You.
And I never did. I mean, I was a one-time shot, you know.
Did any of them get the right answers?
Oh, there were some kids that did real well on it.
Wow.
I had a couple of kids said, I wish you had graded them. And I said, actually, when I tore up those papers at the end of the first class, I only did it in first class. When I tore up those, they weren't the real papers. There was just some papers on my desk that I tore up. And I gave the kids back their papers. And we went over questions. And they had fun. They were like, oh, okay. That was pretty sneaky. But, you know. But anyway, they got the idea of it. And I think what was good was they got to see me, in a different way. But of course, by the fifth year I was teaching, I was rolling along already. I had become Mr. Z, and I did a lot of things differently in my class than other teachers did, which was fine as far as I was concerned, because I wasn't convinced that the school system was working properly.
Take your Blarney and Malarkey to the school board?
To the
administration?
And do what with it? You mean, and do something for them?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I that was still early in my career. It took me about till I was there maybe 7 or 8 years before I started poking the monster, you know, putting the stick in the cage and stuff like that. But I'll tell you a really great joke that someone played on me, and it wasn't April Fool's Day itself, but it was an April Fool's thing. I did a lot of work with kids about drugs and drug. I was a drug counselor, and I did a lot of work with, well, during just before one of the holidays. In my mailbox, in the main office, all the teachers had mailboxes. There was a baggie with some green stuff in it. And I went, got mail out of my mailbox, and this baggie was in the back, and I grabbed it, pulled it, and I looked, I said, oh my God. I thought it looked like marijuana, you know? It
had was this April Fool's?
It wasn't on April Fool's Day. It really wasn't. But it was in the early spring, and it might have been that week or something. But I grabbed that thing, and I walked out of the office, and I went to my classroom. And there was a note that said, you always say you don't, but we think you do. Have fun. And I was, oh, my God. So some kids have put marijuana in my mailbox. Oh my God. And I puzzled over it. That was right before first period. So I taught my first class, and I had second period. I had a short break. And so I went up to the office, and I was trying to think, what am I going to do about this? What am I going to do about this? And Mrs. Schmidt, her name was Leontine. Anyway, we called her Lonnie. This is Lonnie Schmidt. She was the secretary. She was the senior secretary. She was wonderful and really smart lady, and had been around for a long time. She said, kind of had a smile on her face. She said, oh, Mr. Z, the principal would like to see you if you have a minute. And I walked over to the principal's door, and not thinking at all, you know, I mean, I was puzzled about this marijuana stuff. Opened the door, and there was the principal and George Williams, the head of the social studies department, you know, and they were both smiling. And I said, you SOBs. I didn't say the full word. George Williams said, "Gotcha." George Williams was a great teaser. He teased a lot about stuff like that. But he said, did you know it was a joke? I said, no, I was scared. The whole first period, I was wondering, what am I going to do about this? Who do I tell? In fact, I came up here to talk to the principal and see what to do. Should I, turn this into the police or something? And they were both howling, And when I came out of the office after a couple of minutes, the secretary said, "What was that all about?" And I said, "You don't want to know." But it was a good joke on me, because I spent, a whole period trying to concentrate on teaching chemistry and worrying about what the heck I'm going to do about a bag of marijuana.
So that was a principal that you got along with well.
No, I didn't get along with that principal that well. I got along with him okay, but George Williams and I were very good friends, and we both really pushed each other's buttons a lot, But George was an older man I thought he was a brilliant teacher. I sat in on a couple of his classes my first year there, because somebody told me, if you want to see a really good teacher who doesn't have to use the textbook and knows how to work with kids, he really was good. George would be in every morning. We'd get in early and read the newspaper. A couple of us would get in early and have coffee and kibitz and look at the sports and stuff like that. But George would look at the newspaper, and I remember after being there for just a couple of weeks, I said, "Mr. Williams, you really do look at that paper, and I see you put notes and stuff. Well, why?" He said, "I don't do lesson plans. I'm teaching American history, U.S. history." And he said, "Every day in the paper, there is so much for the kids to learn." And so I just used it as I take a couple of stories and I use them as the beginning for my class. And we always have great discussions. And each time I visited his class, I was amazed, because it gave me a powerful tool that I used over the years. I would often scour the papers the night before or during the week and pick out stuff about science, because that's what I did, taught science and math, and make notes on it and bring that up in class. And the kids like that very much. And George Williams was a brilliant educator, because the kids liked talking about modern stuff, even though they wound up talking about history and stuff. They felt emboldened by the fact that they were talking about stuff about their time too. Mm-hmm. And it was good.
Ostensibly they could know as much as he did.
That's right. And I remember him saying, over the years we talked, he said, "You'd be amazed at the number of kids who've told me they never read the paper until they were in my class. And then they caught on that's not a bad thing to do. So you don't have to read everything, but you should look in the paper and see what's going on in your world and see what's happening, And to this day, my father read the paper every morning. He read the morning paper before he went to work, and he was a construction worker who would religiously. And I read the paper every morning. I still do it. First thing I do after I get up in the morning and sit in my chair and I'm finally awake and all, I open up my iPad. I get the New York Times in my iPad, and I go through, I read through the articles and everything. I check the sports lines, the teams I'm following. Like now it's the national basketball tournament stuff. And I've made a habit of doing that, and I still do it. I think it's
what
a
paper
great
did your dad read?
The Baltimore Sun, and we used to get the News American also when I was a kid, but he preferred the Sun. We did get both papers. he would read the Sun while he had his first two cups of coffee in the morning. And, you know.
Good story.
Yeah.
Wish I had known George Williams. That would have been
Oh, boy. Fun. George, he was a really, really fine educator and a great friend, you know. And I you know, he's gone now, but I do remember a number of times he and I laughed so hard in the faculty room because of something, some prank we pulled on each other or somebody else. And, you know, but he was so encouraging. He was a good mentor, and he was loved by the kids. You know, he was one of those guys where all the kids thought Mr. Williams was okay. Even the guys that were, even the kids that, you know, you thought were kind of jerky kids,
mm-hmm.
they liked Mr. Williams. You know, so I did learn a lot from him.
Well, you're reminding me of one of my teachers. So when I get into my story, I will mention him too. But okay. You've been listening, listeners, to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Olkowski, and we should have a time check.
I have 31 minutes.
Okay, that's good. I agree.
Okay. All right, I do want to say a quick word about Stories in the Round. Susan Gordon will be opening our series on April 22nd, and I will be sending out a MailChimp to everybody whose email address I have. So if you're listening and I don't have your email address, you want to email me at fanitsky@hotmail.com. F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y.
I already did.
You did. You answered.
Right.
But we'll be sending out reminders. So let me know if you want to be on
that. I'm looking forward to seeing Susan. And I got a lovely thing. I wrote to her about Andy Offit's workshop coming in, I guess that's in July,
mm-hmm.
or is it in June? I forget.
July.
And he'll be at Stories in Around, right?
That's right. He will be. Even people who only heard him once years in the past, even if they didn't hear him in the last couple of years, are asking me if he's coming.
Will you be going to that workshop?
Yes, I will.
Maybe we could go together.
Maybe we could. That would be fun. Because then we would have even additional story practice and
that's right.
And right. Blarney and malarkey.
Right.
For the trips both ways.
Yeah. We always have a good time in a car.
We do. I miss our trips to the radio station now
that
we can get all on Zoom.
You know. See, Jerry Seinfeld must have heard about us because he had that whole series where he was riding around with people in a car.
That's right. I remember
those. Because
sometimes they were very interesting, and sometimes they were just straight out weird. But I did see them a few times. Lots of Blarney and malarkey. Well, the reason I wanted to talk about Blarney and malarkey this week for April Fool's Day is because I had really been thinking about talking about Blarney and malarkey the week of St. Patrick's Day. But I was way too busy. I was getting ready for the National Women's Storytelling Festival. And I didn't have time to work on another story. But St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, is my dad's birthday. Bill Crawford would have been 102 years old this year. He passed away in 2001 after a lifetime of telling Blarney and malarkey stories.
Wow.
Now, Bill Crawford, my dad, was not Irish. He was African-American, but there was some Celtic influence and other strains of the British Isles in his genealogy, in our shared genealogy in there too. But maybe more important, he grew up in a small town in Western New York where some of his friends in high school were Irish and Italian immigrants who, according to Bill, would woo him out on the town each St. Patrick's Day, knowing it was his birthday. And that was the perfect excuse for these rowdy shenanigans for them to think up wacky things to do, and a lot of beer, according to my dad. And this phrase, Blarney and Malarkey, that I've been saying for the past half month over and over again, I was reminded of that phrase by a Mark Knopfler album. I have a whole bunch of Mark Knopfler CDs, the very talented and multi, I say multimedia, but really just multiple strands of music, guitarist and singer-songwriter. He has a song called I'm Cleaning My Gun, Mark Knopfler songs that I particularly enjoy. I think mostly because it has a bluesy beat and, you know, you can tell by the title, it's about people who live on the margins, cleaning my gun. Anyway, he talks about the nefarious and devious firm of Blarney and Malarkey. And that reminded me of the phrase. But when I was thinking about St. Patrick's Day and April Fool's Day, I looked up the phrase Blarney and Malarkey online and in the Christian Science, and what popped up was an article in the Christian Science Monitor. And there were other options. I could have looked at other sites.
Wow.
And Mr. Sweeney, of course, had Irish ancestors, and he would often hold forth in class about what the things that he considered Blarney and Malarkey, either those of his own Irish forebears or sometimes just the general social fabric of our community or history. He was quite a raconteur himself, though not in the same vein as my dad's. They had very different interests. Both my dad and Mr. Sweeney were interested in politics, but they were kind of at the opposite ends of the political spectrum, at least as I knew it. And I can remember my dad muttering to himself at the Crawford dinner table in what sounded to me like an exasperated voice, possibly just exhaustion. But if I was telling another anecdote fresh from the mouth of my teacher, and I would hear my dad saying under his breath, Mr. Sweeney says, Mr. Sweeney says, Mr. Sweeney says. In a very annoyed voice. One of Mr. Sweeney's catchphrases was, you're all a bunch of cultural barbarians. And then he would hold forth on whatever he thought was so egregious that we didn't know the answer to some questions or something. And that was almost 60 years ago, if my memory is correct. I'm pretty sure about that. My memory's not so good, but I remember being 12 years old in Mr. Sweeney's class. So my dad must have been in his early 50s by then. But in this Christian Science Monitor article by Ian O'Carroll from 2014, I learned a lot about April Fool's Day and about Blarney and Malarkey. So 2014 is a different era from where we are now in many ways, before such cataclysmic events as the election of a new wave of anti-democracy wannabe dictators around the world. It was before the COVID epidemic. It was this burgeoning of the rise of a new generation of women activists. Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai was only 17 when she became poet laureate. Greta Thunberg, Nobel nominee at age 16, and every year for the past 5 years straight. So, you know, in some ways it's a different world than even this article was written, and certainly a different world than me being 12 years old in sixth grade. But I will always remember 50 years ago, sitting at Mr. Sweeney's feet almost. But Mr. Ian O'Carroll, who is the columnist that wrote this Blarney and Malarkey article, writes that most of the Irish words and sayings that have entered our American English vocabulary from the Celtic, from the Irish language, are associated with bad luck. And he gives the example of phony, rat, smithereens, slew, shebang, slob. Apparently, these are all Gaelic words. And he talks a bit about the word shenanigans. And I think it was, I'm not positive, but I think that was where I saw the statistic that there's some 40 bars in the United States, taverns and barns, whose name is shenanigans from the Irish. He also, O'Carroll proposed the union of the progeny of the Shanahans and the Finnegan clans in order to create a new but legendary line of modern Celtic shenanigans. He says shenanigan is not a surname, but if you crossed the Shanahan and the Finnegan clans, you would have shenanigans. Anyway, he defines Blarney as a kind of glib, flattering deception that takes its name from Blarney Castle, which, Stosh, if my memory serves, I think a couple of our storytelling friends have visited Blarney Castle. I don't want to give their names because I'm not positive I have the right tellers, but I know I've listened to stories from at least one or two of them who visited County Cork and went up in the medieval fortress, the site of the Stone of Eloquence, that rock that's embedded high up in one of the castle's machicolations. I had to look up how to pronounce that word. Those are the gaps in the highest part of the stone walls, allowing castle defenders to drop things onto the heads of everybody else, but specifically invaders in old Ireland. So to be gifted with the skills of a Blarney slinger, you visit the castle and scale the tiny twisting staircase to its peak, usually amidst the long line of American tourists, for the privilege of dangling upside down above the very hard ground 100 feet below in order to kiss the Blarney Stone, which, according to Ian O'Carroll, bears clear evidence of hundreds of years of the lips of international travelers smacking at the Blarney Stone, lipstick, among other byproducts. But your certain reward will be a fast-moving tongue, able to captivate any audience with streams of conscious wit and charm. And of course, that tale itself that you would tell of your Celtic escapade will initiate the process, hence the legend of the Blarney Stone. Malarkey, according to Ian O'Carroll, means another sort of poppycock, that which lacks any redeeming value at all. And as part of our American vocabulary, anyway, is usually included in the phrase a load of malarkey. But I believe this personal passion I have for Blarney and malarkey came from my dad. May he rest in peace. But today is not, in fact, my father's birthday, but instead April Fool's Day, which is not entirely a different kettle of fish. There are some similarities to start with. This is an old, old holiday. It probably didn't originate in Ireland. There's some traditions in the Greater British Isles going back to the 14th century, and there's arguments over whether Chaucer mentions it. There's dispute over whether he's really referring to April Fool's Day and some of his prose and poems. But I did learn of the Irish tradition on April Fool's Day to hand an important letter to someone, to an acquaintance or a friend, and ask them to take it to a very important person. And that person, when they received the letter, would open it, read it, and then ask the victim to take it to someone else, because they couldn't solve the problem without that other person's help, the third person's help. And the letter would move on each time the person reading the letter would read, "Send the fool further." And depending how foolish the fool, there are tales of that person, the fool, being sent on to 3 to 5 others before figuring out what's going on. I've never had that happen to me, but I can imagine friends who might do something like that. In Beau Carroll's writing, I think he talks about Iran as being the most ancient of the traditions where pulling pranks on April 1st has long been a tradition and is written about in their literature. But Stasz, I wanted to tell you about what I read about Poland. So you were shaking.
Good. Since you mentioned it, I followed it up.
Uh-huh. And what did you learn?
It's basically a nonsense that is celebrated in Cleveland. Dingus Day.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, you're not
April Fool's Day.
It's a different day.
It's Easter Monday.
Okay. It's called this is not from O'Carroll. This is from Wikipedia. And we've already had our conversation about the need for rigorous research to get behind where information comes from. And I haven't done my rigorous research, but let me quote. In Poland, Prima April is a day of pranks and a centuries-long tradition. It is a day when many pranks are played, sometimes very sophisticated hoaxes prepared by individuals or by the media, which often cooperate to make information is in quotations, more credible, and even by public institutions. Serious activities are usually avoided because every word said on April 1st could be untrue. The conviction for this is so strong that the Polish anti-Turkish alliance with Leopold I, signed on April 1st, 1683, was backdated to March 31st, and there is a citation for that. However, for some in Poland, Prima April ends at noon on April 1st, and therefore Prima April jokes told after that hour are considered inappropriate and very déclassé. All of which, the complete paragraph sounds like it could be a farce.
I think it is. I don't believe it.
All right. Well, I'm going to do some more research so we can continue this debate at some other time.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I can send you all kind of stuff already from my research. Cleveland.
All right. Please do. Yeah, well, even I know a lot of people who live in Cleveland, and maybe I will talk that up with them and share that with them.
Right. I just want, anyway, I never heard of anything about April Fool's Day in my background, and so when I just Googled this, you know how you do that.
Did you play pranks on Easter Monday?
No, I not. They said they called that Wet Monday, and Easter Monday was a day of celebrating that Easter had arrived and it was gone and everything, all the celebration was over. And now was the time to rejoice. You don't have to worry about, the dead and the resurrection and all that. Now it's just all that is over and you could celebrate.
And so what is wet about it? Oh, wet because you can drink.
I guess. I think so. I don't know, but I was just amazed when you said it was about Poland. So So and see, and it says Dingus Day, which would not be a Polish name, but they do have it, and all about Cleveland in there. I don't know. I have to do more research. Maybe some Poles started a long time ago in Cleveland. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's just, you know, one of those things. And with the Polish history, ever since the all through the 1900s, I can't imagine that Polish people playing jokes on anybody, because their history is not very much fun.
Brutal.
Absolutely awful. Yeah. Along with many of the other European countries. So
we had a woman come to church, to the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown yesterday, who I don't think had ever been there before. She reminded me of someone I had met there many years ago, but I don't think it was the same woman. Anyway, she said she was from Poland and she had a very pronounced accent. So I believed her. And she went on for some time. The topic, the sermon topic yesterday was Jesus a pacifist? And there was quite a spirited conversation during congregational response after the sermon. And she was one of the people who was most interested in providing her take on that. And it was based on the history of Poland and learning and the story she had from her parents about both the Nazi and the Soviet invasion of Poland. So that was.
And what was her take on that?
She said she was not a pacifist because she thought it was not reasonable to expect human beings to be able to maintain that stance, and that there was no point in it because human beings were much too violent.
So she thought Jesus wasn't a pacifist.
She didn't really comment on whether Jesus was a pacifist.
Oh, okay.
It didn't matter to her whether Jesus was a pacifist or not. What mattered to her was survival in the current world, the current climate.
Okay.
And she thought pacifism was an unrealistic and overly idealistic point of view. And
Because
she knew that from her parents.
None of those pacifists ever make it.
Hmm.
Gandhi, Martin Luther King.
You mean they get murdered?
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a comment on their success or failure.
Well, I don't think they were successful.
About their impact on the world.
Really? You think Gandhi had a big impact on the world?
I do. I do.
Really?
But in any case, I don't want to talk about pacifism right
I
now.
I know.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
I knew you would talk. I knew you would be.
I
that.
Went down the wrong rabbit hole.
Yeah. I don't have a negative feeling towards Gandhi or Martin Luther King. I just think it's a shame they spent all that energy and stuff and it didn't work.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, then we need to have a debate on air.
Well, fine.
Okay. But not today.
No. I have to give you time to gather your data.
Oh, they're pretty much gathered, but
okay.
This just isn't the right time. Because we're talking about Blarney and Malarkey.
Malarkey. Hey, look, I love that kind of stuff. I love jokes, you know. One of the things that I did for my first year of coaching, a young man by the name of Willie Adkins, who was an absolutely phenomenal relay racer, great handoff guy, you know, with the baton and everything, a really good kid. And I made him the captain of my indoor track team. And on the day I made him the captain, he was a bit of a joker. I started my track practice every day by having a short meeting in my room. And I said, "Oh, Willie, something important in my mailbox. Would you go up and get it, please? And I had written him a note saying that he was a captain, new captain of the team and everything. And that, in those days, that was a big deal. To become captain of a sports team was a big, big deal back in the, you know, this was in the early 70s. And anyway, I said, you know, the whole team was sitting in my room. He went up to the office because this thing, and I could hear him. This is after school, so I could hear him coming down the hall. He's saying, "All right, yay, way to go, coach." And when he got to my door, and he had to knock on the door because I always had it closed during our meetings, and I was standing inside the classroom holding a whipped cream pie in my hand. And when he opened that door and stepped in, I said, "Come on in, Captain." And he walked in very proud and bold in front of the whole team, and I smashed him right in the face with a whipped cream pie. And it was a shock to all the kids when I went to the closet and got that pie out. They were going, "Oh, well, what are you going to do with that?" And I said, "Oh, you'll see." Anyway, Willie had played a joke on me the week before, and I wanted to get him back, and I did. And he took it in good spirits.
Well, that is a great story.
And it was fun.
Did he get to eat the rest of the whipped cream?
Oh, boy. I got hell for it, you know.
Okay, well, I want to tell, I'm going to see if I can tell this story in the amount of time we have left, because I don't want to run over. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, go. Stop.
I've been grieving the loss of our cat for several years. He's been gone for several years now, but I've been reading about research that says that 36% of people who live with dogs describe themselves as very happy, but only 18% of people who live with cats are very happy. And, you know, that's a pretty big discrepancy. That's a 50% discrepancy in those two statistics. So in my humble opinion, this research is totally frivolous. Anyone can look at a household with a cat or a dog and can see the average dog lives to please. Your dog loves you. Your cat does not really care about your happiness one way or another. The priority is you have to have a working set of thumbs, a can opener, and a credit card. And the cat is perfectly content. But after our cat Earl had been sick for a while, the day after his last day, sad as I was that day when we lost him, I started cleaning out all his old stuff that might cause health problems for us or any other cats that we might host at some time in the future. And I spent the morning cleaning all the sheets, the blankets, the towels that he'd been in contact with, getting rid of his old litter box. I was even thinking about cleaning floors and rugs. Grief, especially grief tied to house cleaning, makes me hungry. So I took a quick lunch break, just peanut butter on a matzah cracker. You know, unleavened bread of the Israelites, the star of every Passover celebration. In our house, matzah is a regular alternative to bread. It's a staple. And as I put the matzah on a breadboard to start the peanut butter slathering process, I dropped the matzah on the kitchen floor. Remember, I was in cleaning mode and thinking of cat sneeze particles all over the floor. That matzah needed to be sterilized. So I put it in the toaster oven on a rack and turned the temperature to 400. Easy peasy. Well, my husband came into the kitchen just then, and I heard this very odd sound. And I turned to look at the toaster oven. Behind the glass in the oven door, I could see flames. I yanked the electric plug from the wall and quickly opened the oven door, grabbed two potholders, intending to pull out the rack. Once I had my hand on the flaming rack, I couldn't figure out what I would do with it once I got it pulled out. So I rushed get back into the house and close the door. And I yelled. My husband ran over, picked up the toaster oven, and carried it out against his chest, headed out the door. I was sure the oven would explode in his face, but I ran to the back door, opened it, and he set the oven down outside the door, and we stood there. I was frightened, watching the flames slowly die down. Now, Jose was fine. Just a couple small second and third degree burns on his forearms and a bigger one on his chest, but it's healing under the body wraps. Really, once all the hair grows back, he'll be fine. But the oven was too hot to touch for a long time. And then I spent 90 minutes scrubbing to get rid of the awful smell, sort of fumigation and a cleansing. And from now on, I won't need sage smudging to purify the air. I can burn a matzah in memory of a dead cat. I also wanted to tell you about my friend who lives in the woods in a little hippie cabin, very back to the land. She heats with a wood stove and cleans her chimney every fall. But she's a hippie. She can't afford a chimney sweep. And that's why she has a cat, a big orange tabby, a big boy, 20 pounds, 30 inches all the way around him. Well, that's his circumference around his stomach in the middle. But she just tucks him under her arm, climbs right up on the roof with him. Don't worry, he's in a harness on a good leash. And as Fluffy wails and flails, she drops him down the chimney flue and raises and lowers him several times. That's what chimney sweeps do, only they use brushes. Of course, she still has to brush Fluffy real well when he finally hits the bottom and runs out the other end. It makes a lot of dust to clean up too, but she has kittens for that. She straps one of them in a little harness with Velcro straps and attaches them to a sturdy stick that she holds and uses to fluff the kitten around the place. Works better than a feather duster. They're generally self-cleaning, those kittens. Cats are very clean, generally speaking. But I wanted to tell you about my cat, Earl, when he was young and really until he got very old. He liked me to read to him. And then I would have to make dinner, both for us people and for him, but he had favorite Italian recipes and he liked me to speak to him in Italian while I was making his dinner. So that's a whole another story. So I can relate to that study that says only 18% of people who live with cats are very happy. Now that Earl is gone, well, I visited the animal shelter the other day. After all I have left is Jose, my husband, and his burns are almost healed now. But I'm wondering if I should trade him in for that very handsome Jack Russell Terrier I saw.
Yikes.
We're out of time.
I bet there are. I'd like to look into the studies about that because I have one of my best friends, Jay Butler, who's passed away, but for 46 years, so I consider him to be my dearest friend. He often would say to me, "You need a dog. You really need a dog." He always had a dog, and you know, and
so we'll have a topic for next time.
What's the topic?
Dogs and cats, pro and con.
Oh my God.
Or just dogs, pro and con. Yep. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stash Ziolkowski.
Closing out the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown,